We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. And subscribe to a premium membership over on thefederalist.com. I'm joined today by the khaki pants with embroidered ducks wearing Christopher Bedford, who is the executive editor over at the Common Sense Society. Chris, welcome.
I dress up for our podcast. I wish I could say the same for you.
You know, as you should. You're on my show.
It's a matter of respect.
For me.
This is a website that offers premium memberships. And I show respect to that.
Right. Well, Chris, one of the biggest subjects in the news over the last, couple weeks is someone that you know very well. And let's talk about Tucker Carlson because...
No, Tucker Carlson was mean to me.
Before we get into why the left is obsessed with Tucker Carlson, why the left is obsessed with Fox News, I want to ask Chris, when did you first meet Tucker Carlson?
Oh, this is personal. I met him in 2010 at a Tea Party rally.
Really?
Yeah. He was advertising the Daily Caller. It was going to be his new thing. Ron Paul was there. And he was like, the Daily Caller is going to be the conservative answer to the New York Times. We all now know it was kind of more of a tabloid-style newspaper, the Daily Caller. And then I ended up getting hired by him a couple months later to work at the Daily Caller back when he ran it every day with his partner, Neil. He was still over there. And we worked together for years and years and good friend.
How long did you work at the Daily Caller?
8 years.
So you worked at the Daily Caller for most of its existence.
Yeah, I guess that would be true. Started in 2011. That's around when I joined and was left just December 2019.
Are there lessons as a journalist that you take from Tucker or that you feel like you learned specifically from Tucker? I'm sure we could have the same conversation about what you learned from Neil. But as somebody who was working at a fairly young age until you were an old man like you are now. Are there particular things you think you took from Tucker, who had a pretty long writing career before starting The Caller, not just on cable news, but as a journalist, writer, Weekly Standard and other places?
I think the main kind of life lesson that I took from it was that before the Daily Caller really came around, the right had dominated because people like Rush Limbaugh, radio programming. The right was very successful in magazines. You had National Review. And before that, they'd since fallen by the wayside or being refounded, kind of Human Events and places like that. The right dealt very well with opinion, essentially. They could sell books. They could have talk shows. You could have Bill O'Reilly. But what the right really didn't do very well at all was provide any kind of counter narrative to the news stories that were going on. And one of the major ways that bias impacts the news is not just on CNN's gone stupid. They've gone crazy. They've embarrassed themselves. They call people names. You see the New York Times, everyone be like, this people's racist. But that's not where the real bias is. The real bias is in what stories you cover and what you don't, who you talk to and who you don't, how you headline it and how you don't. And the amount of stories that are just not covered because they don't fit the bias. I mean, just the fact, if you turn on CNN or MSNBC or CBS or whatever, you're not going to hear that the border is a collapsed area, completely controlled by foreign cartels in a broken, failed state called Mexico. You're not going to hear about the extreme violence in D.C., or in Chicago, about the recalls of district attorneys and mayors. You're not going to hear that side of the story. So the Daily Caller kind of showed in a way that's been, I think, happily copied by a lot of different places or moved on to by another different places from their own way, that there's so much low-hanging fruit. There's so much out there. There's so much things, so many different corruption, investigations. You don't even have to dig that deep to find stuff. But if you do dig deep, you'll get incredible stories. So he taught me kind of that a lot of young people, when they come out, they want to be Krauthammer or Buckley or Ann Coulter or Tucker Carlson for a living. And what they don't realize is that those people, before they were out there making declarations from the top of...
Proclaiming.
They were doing the hard work. Tucker started off as a crime beat reporter and then was a writer for the Weekly Standard for years. Ann Coulter was a reporter for, I think, a decade or more.
She was an attorney.
All those different people who offer their opinions for a living are a lot of them, not mm-hmm. everyone. The ones who are good at it, the ones who have staying power, did a lot before they got there. And that kind of teaching people how to be reporters, teaching people how to be journalists, teaching people how to not, you know, do everything you could to not make mistakes. He also taught me that he hated pylons, like with a passion.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that.
If everybody in D.C. was attacking someone, he liked them. It really didn't matter who it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Jack Abramoff was released from prison, Tucker threw a party for him at his house, a book party.
Were you there?
Yeah, I was bartending.
How was it?
It was nice.
Good tips.
I mean, me and my friend Gray tended bar because Tucker would reach out to staff, and I was bartending on the side when working there. I'd be like, hey, who can work this part? Who could work things at my house, like school fundraisers and stuff? And he'd pay you. It was just really fun to meet all these different people. So I have a copy of Jack Abramoff's book where he signed it, "Thanks for the best night I've had in a long, long time." He was there with his wife and his daughter. He'd been through a lot at that point. It'd been pretty rough on him. He's a patron saint of third chances. Mm-hmm. I mean, when he started the Daily Caller, he just finished recording Dancing with the Stars. He had actually finished recording, but it was never released because Fox bought it, a game show. He had at one point been banned from Fox News. His campus wasn't allowed on there because he'd given out their booking number mm-hmm. on air and had shown up there threatening to fight someone. Yelling outside like a crazy person. He'd been fired from CNN. He'd been fired from MSNBC. He thought about running for president on a libertarian ticket. And he toured the country, him and his college roommate, Neil Patel, and his co-founder, with Roger Stone, trying to figure out if there was a constituency out there.
Daily Caller men's fashion editor.
Yes. And if Roger Stone tells you something's a bad idea, that's a really bad idea.
It's like apocalyptically bad.
So they're like, oh, screw it. We'll start the Daily Caller instead. I think they found it at the Palm restaurant. And it was just, he taught me to be, could have no regard for all of the self-important idiots all around DC. That you're never going to be, like, be your own cool kid stable, be a pirate ship. These guys are losers. They're finger sniffers. Most of them are dumb. Half of them are frauds. They take money from the Chinese and the Saudis. The think tanks are full of it. Conservative Inc. At that time, I mean, from Cato to Heritage to whoever, the Kochs, it's like they're all garbage. Granted, he went on speaking tours and would accept payments and things like that. But he was just very down on Conservative Inc. He was thinking way outside the box. He used to argue with me all the time about capital gains taxes versus labor taxes. And it was just so at that point in his life starting to really question a lot of just Con Inc., Reaganite, the zombie Reagan thinking.
Early Obama era.
Yeah. And he kind of, the main thing to take away is to work hard, go for those stories, but have two middle fingers in the air and just do what you're going to do and don't try to follow, because most of the people around you in D.C. Are contemptible, corrupt, and stupid.
So most people in D.C. for the past couple of weeks have been mired in this hysterical back and forth over every single new text message or email that comes out from Tucker Carlson, and then also every single thing he says on air, even though I actually don't think they're watching much of it, with the release of the January 6th tapes, which I know you haven't gotten a chance to watch his coverage of yet, so we won't dive too deep into that, specifically because we didn't plan to talk about Tucker. I just realized
this is a surprise. This is a strange one.
I realized just here you are. Like, what a resource we have, Christopher Bedford, to zoom out and kind of think through this with a broadened aperture about the bigger context that's at stake in the media's hysteria over not just Tucker, but Fox News, over the lawsuit, over the January 6th tapes, from the time the Daily Caller was founded, 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
Okay. So until now, yeah, there's this flourishing conservative media ecosystem that does do a lot of investigative reporting that wouldn't be touched by anyone else. I mean, your fiance, Sarah, digs their IG reports and comes up with things that people in the corporate press wouldn't even know where to begin with because they're not interested in it. They wouldn't even know it's a story, basically. And what, 10 plus years into that project, I think the project, this new era in conservative media, this like reporting era of conservative media, the left is obsessively trying to kill there's a hearing happening today over on Capitol Hill, like just a few blocks from us, where members of Congress are calling Matt Taibbi a so-called journalist because of the Twitter files, because there are people who aren't even in conservative media that are being lumped into this broader space of conservative media to be lumped in together with what the left considers bigots and intolerable inciters of all kinds of different things. Because it's now, I think, strong. I feel like that's where it's coming from, that there's a real strength to the challenges to the media right now.
The media really believes in this just cult of expertise, this whole thing of like, how dare you question this guy? He's a scientist, but he's the right scientist. He's allowed to talk. How dare you question this person? They're a doctor. How dare you? I got my master's in education, which is like a fake master's design or a doctorate designed to give you a raise. How dare you question Dr. Jill Biden? She's a doctor. And that cult of expertise really extends to their own coverage of their own media. Like, I work for CNN. Who are you to question my narrative? Who are you to play back what I said? I mean, I remember like Jake Tapper, someone who kind of comes across on air as like a reasonable person, but is actually like super unhinged. And if you're a woman in conservative media between the ages of 22 and 26 and have written something about him.
He does it to men too.
The most people I know have dealt with it are women. Then he's going to like explode in your DMs with all caps, curses.
Unhinged.
Yeah. He did it once to Jeff Ingersoll, editor-in-chief of the Daily Caller, former Marine from the Poconos, who could bench press three of them. And it just was hysterical. Jeff's reaction didn't move at all. He was so angry that Jeff had replayed clips of him calling Allahu Akbar a beautiful prayer after somebody screaming Allahu Akbar ran a van into bicyclists in New York City. He's like, Allahu Akbar, usually a beautiful prayer. So the headline was like, Jake Tapper calls Allahu Akbar a beautiful prayer. And he flipped. Like, they don't even like to have you remember what they say. They don't like you to question them.
He flipped on a Marine that served in the Middle East.
Yeah, well,
beautiful.
Jake Tapper, you know, he's one of those guys who really thinks that he served because he's gone over there a couple times. He knows a lot of people who served. You know, you've met those people who work in civilian capacity at the Pentagon or have, like, kind of a lot of friends who are veterans. So they kind of feel like they're veterans as well. That's the real stolen valor kind of stuff that you actually get. It's not the retarded guy in the parking lot who dresses up like a soldier outside of Kmart and stands there with medals on his chest where he sees like some guy with PTSD screaming at him on camera. That's not like the real stolen valor. It's like, it's the reporters, the people who claim that they were almost shot down in their helicopters.
Hillary Clinton
taking sniper fire. Like, there's actual stolen valor out there.
She was trying to organize a colony. They came for her.
Oh man. That used to be a whole Daily Caller genre. Was like, and Jeff put an end to it, thank God, and everyone felt guilty for being a part of it. Like, that dude walking around is like cross-eyed in the mall who's wearing like fake medals and like some veterans just flipping out on him. It's like, leave the weirdo alone. Right. He has no idea what's going on. But you get a lot of that stuff from the expert class, and they hate the people like Tucker have more views than them. They hate that people like Tucker and the Daily Caller and the Federalists are willing to ask questions that they think are out of bounds. They want to call it disinformation. They want to call it sexist. They want to call it racist. They want to call it whatever ism they can come up with. Because somebody is daring to question them. They went to journalism school. They went to NYU. They did this or that. They've got 1,000 Twitter followers. And they don't like anyone. And so they fly off the handle like a very bad parent or like substitute teacher whenever anyone actually pushes back against them. And when you're someone like Tucker who routinely comes up with the facts, who when he started his opinion show on Fox just said, was really explicit, I'm not just going to do an opinion, I'm going to do real reporting, which, you know, rubbed a couple people even inside the company the wrong way, because they're like, no, you're supposed to do the opinion side. You talk about how Republicans are good and Democrats are bad. We'll do the real reporting.
Yeah.
And Tucker hired reporters right off the bat and went to work trying to break original stories all the time. And that drove everyone nuts. I love it. It's like pouring water on those circuits. They start to spit and spout, sputter and spatter, and they spaz off being like, how dare you? You're threatening democracy by showing security footage from inside the Capitol.
You must start taking care of your liver now more than ever. Why? Well, because the latest data from the American Heart Association indicates that adults with fatty liver were 3.5 times more likely to have heart failure than those without. The American Liver Foundation says that 100 million Americans have fatty liver, which means many people are at risk. We throw everything at our livers: cholesterol, alcohol, toxins, Tylenol, statins, cigarettes. That's why so many of us have a sluggish fatty liver that makes us gain weight and lose energy. For decades now, your liver helped you with over 500 key functions every day. It's time you help your liver. There is a solution: Liver Health Formula, an all-natural supplement which contains 12 clinically proven botanicals that help recharge and protect your liver. Manufactured right here in the USA and approved by American doctors. You can try Liver Health Formula and receive 5 free gifts when you order today. First, you'll receive a free bottle of nano-powered omega-3 to keep your heart healthy. You're also getting 4 free ebooks to support every aspect of your health. Try Liver Health Formula by going to getliverhelp.com/federalist and claim your 5 free bonus gifts. That's getliverhelp.com/federalist. Yeah, and I think my broader point is just that this is happening more and more. It seems like this, to me, is happening more and more lately. And it's not like, oh, these are the kooky conservatives we can just brush aside. And a broader point to that is Matt Taibbi has been, I think, very good about responding to this in a way that gives conservative media credit. You know, when our former colleague Gabe Kaminsky did his amazing investigative series on the GDI State Department collaboration over at the Washington Examiner, Taibbi was really good about crediting Gabe for that. But I think in general, it's not that some of these people are anti-conservative, but I do think it's absolutely true that without conservative media, a lot of the groundwork for starting to question the nonsense about COVID, for starting to question the nonsense that was happening in public schools and private schools, of course, but public schools with neo-racism dressed up as anti-racism, all of this stuff, without conservative media, I truly, truly don't think that you would have found people sticking their necks out to mount serious challenges to this stuff in a bipartisan way. I think the reason that there's a hearing right now being conducted by Republicans in the House is with Matt Taibbi, Michael Schellenberger, and others. And Schellenberger's been on this podcast. He's great. I'm not accusing Barry Weiss, Michael Schellenberger, and Matt Taibbi of this, but I am saying I think over the last 10 plus years, conservative media has played a fairly instrumental role that's easy to gloss over. When it comes to laying the groundwork for some of these very powerful people and their very powerful campaigns to truly face scrutiny and challenges.
Yeah, I think those guys obviously fall out well outside of conservative media, but they've followed, I think, and happily so. Glenn Greenwald is actually maybe someone who stands out as not like this. He was at the forefront of questioning the entire time. But most people...
Russiagate, yeah.
Yeah, most people have... followed along. John Stewart's, you know, brave John Stewart, following along and being like, hey, going on Stephen Colbert's show, because he was allowed to go to those places that right-wing media is not, and saying, you know, it's really, like, really obvious that this virus came from the Wuhan lab.
Yeah.
Like, it's really stupid to suggest otherwise.
Yeah.
That was work that had been done for months and months and months before in conservative media. They were threatened for it repeatedly. They were fact-checked for it. Google tried to pull ad money. English think tanks were trying to write reports about how it was all disinformation. I'm happy to be a part of that. I mean, I've kind of left this sphere a little bit, but I'm happy to be a part of that group that says, well, I'm not going to sit at the cool kids table. I don't care. I'll be the vanguard in this with, like, that kind of Tucker idea of two fingers in the air, right in the tip. And then people can follow you. And as long as the news eventually gets out, it's worthwhile. But there wouldn't be a curiosity about it. I mean, people want to talk about how we could go back to the good old days of American news and it wasn't opinionated. They would say that when in the 80s and 90s or seven, more like less than 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, that you could trust the news. But, I mean, could you? They still chose what stories they wanted to publish. I mean, look at the coverage of Barry Goldwater's campaign. I don't think that would be fair. the coverage of Ronald Reagan. We had this nostalgia for a time before openly opinionated journalism or conservative journalism versus liberal journalism. Some people want to say, well, there shouldn't be either side. I think it's better for people to know, kind of have an idea over where people are coming from. The way media was always written, the way newspapers started, would generally be for parties.
I was just going to say, yeah, quote, neutral media has always been an aberration. It was a technological response to mass media that you had to appeal to as many people as possible to get as many advertisers as possible. So they came up with this like version of neutrality that did appeal to both the left and the right, but that doesn't mean that it was actually neutral. It just meant that it looked and felt neutral.
Yeah, and part of the reason why we had that neutral media and that neutral broadcast media is because owning the television channel was considered by the government a public service. So you had to provide a public service. You couldn't simply own television and broadcast and just provide your entertainment programming for money. So these channels, this CBS, wherever else, these networks, they had to create news shows in order to justify their existence legally. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of considered a loss leader, a public service, something that wasn't going to actually be profitable, but something that they had to do and they ought to do, a public service. And they'd put people out there and they'd try to be fair. But at the end of the day, when there's only Walter Cronkite or whoever else you're listening to, the only thing that Americans think might be news is what he's talking about.
You're the gatekeeper, yeah.
Yeah, you're the gatekeeper. Of course, there was
three of them. When there are three channels, there are three gatekeepers. Mm-hmm. And there are three on radio, three on television, and three in the major newspapers. When you have a robust local news ecosystem.
Which they did have at the time.
Yes, now it's all like owned by Gannett and most of it's gone anyway.
Yeah, it's sad, actually. If you see, I've noticed over the last couple of years, you see like a really bad accident on the road. I've tried to look up, okay, what happened? Are people okay? You can't find it. Mm-hmm. There's no one doing it. Even in Washington, D.C., or in Dallas, Texas, nobody's reporting on it. It's really frustrating to realize how broken that is. But this is we have a fairly now at this point robust conservative or alternative news. And it used to be a couple of years ago in 2011, it was just corporate news and conservative news, really. And then you had some of these side guys.
Salon and Slate were doing their thing.
Yeah, doing their thing. And those guys were all invited to the nice places. They were invited 100%. To the show. When the Federalist was started, the Federalist was invited to all the places. Federalist was invited to Aspen. Federalist was invited to the New York Times. People were like, all right, these are the ones we can deal with. And then when the Federalist started throwing punches to the throat and calling balls and strikes, then suddenly it wasn't allowed. I mean, there's a really nice article in the Washington Post, but when the Daily Caller was launched, being like, look at this. And everybody was friends. And it was just a very non-threatening thing until the Daily Caller started breaking stories. And then suddenly became Nazis and persona non grata. And that's one of the really sad parts about the last couple of years is in 2016, it seemed like things were finally coming to fruition. There is a number of very good center-right and alternative news sites that have been joined by people like Taibbi and others who were kind of pushing back against the craziness. There was, for the couple of moments, there was a moment of self-reflection on the left that maybe we shouldn't have written off half the country.
Literally 2 weeks.
Yeah. Donald Trump had been elected president, which was going to give incredible access to people who had been cultivating it, like the Daily Caller had. Tucker was about to begin his show. He had just left the company and just gotten his own primetime show. It seemed like at the beginning of it, Facebook threw a party with the Daily Caller on the inauguration day.
Oh, yeah, that was a good party. You know who was there? You remember who was there?
Farmer Bro was there.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he got into a fist fight with one of our reporters and got thrown out. Scarelli.
I was talking to people and all of a sudden someone said something over my shoulder and I looked back to see who it was and did a double take and I was like, but that's to your point about Tucker. The more people are piling on someone, the more Tucker's going to be like, hey, maybe there's something interesting here.
Yeah, he likes weird people.
Yeah.
The amount of crazy and wild and insane dinners I've sat through because he thought someone was interesting. There was only one time ever when I was like, dude, that guy was evil. And he's like, I know, but he's so weird, right? So interesting. I think he was evil. He was this evangelical preacher to dictators who flew around in like a broken 347 and had carried around with him a photo album of all of him like praying with all these different like this cannibal dictator in Africa, Slobodan Milosevic, all of them. And he's like, I'm a very great man. He was interesting, but it was an awful dinner. So things But things weaponized very quickly.
Yeah.
They decided, all right, we've tolerated this for so long, but now it's actually threatened us. I mean, they claimed it was threatening, but like a Senate, a President McCain or a President Romney or a President Bush was not like really threatening to the regime. It was think go along. President Trump was, and they decided that it was, they tolerated it for long enough. And overnight, the advertising dollars were being threatened and drying up. Google was burying search results. The technology platforms moved against it. Facebook stopped working together. They used to work very closely together. It was just, to them, it was just business before. Twitter got a lot more heavy-handed in its response. Even the parties in D.C. started to dry up. You could get an exclusive interview with Donald Trump, the president of the United States, saying something that was absolutely newsworthy, and it would not be picked up by the morning newsletters if it came from, like, the Daily Caller or the Federalist.
Yep, absolutely.
And they realized that the best way to suffocate this new ecosystem was to completely ignore it.
Yep.
I mean, and they were largely successful. There were people who didn't hear about the Biden tapes until the election was over. Mm-hmm. Like normal voters who just, they wake up in the morning, they watch Good Morning America.
Well, they did an academic paper on that.
It was completely ignored, the whole ecosystem, and the hope was to suffocate it. And now they turn around and be like, oh, it's a silo. It's people who don't have access. It's people who only go for things that they agree with. Mm-hmm. It's like pot calling the kettle black. And now they call it dangerous disinformation. And they're not even content with simply trying to strangle the advertising dollars, strangle the internet access, strangle the search engine optimization. They actually now want to go and sue them and sue them out of existence. And they're gleefully covering all of that. And I guess the latest thing is that Tucker Carlson dared to question the January 6th narrative.
Well, this is the thing that I don't think it's even, I understand. I think it is important to quibble with the characterizations of in the mainstream press, the so-called mainstream press right now, over Tucker and over Fox News. News, and you and I can sit here and absolutely come up with disagreements with Tucker and Fox News and criticism. We can absolutely do that. No person or network is perfect. That is absolutely true. But you are completely missing the forest for the trees. If you think the bigger story here is what the corporate press is telling you it is, like that is a stupid, stupid, stupid game to play, because this is part of a broader thing where you have the combined powers of every single news network, media company in the world, except for Fox, major media companies, except for Fox News, like powers that Rupert Murdoch could only ever dream of having, aligned against Fox News, aligned against Tucker Carlson. So for everything that people think Tucker does wrong or says wrong or whatever, Fox News at least knows it can make money by presenting different viewpoints.
They're always so full of it. I mean, yeah, like when you hear
and
like
viewpoints, by the way, that are representative of a large swath of the population and deserve to have a voice in the national discourse, even if they're sometimes wrong, even if they sometimes like stray into territory that people are uncomfortable with.
I like places where people are uncomfortable.
Of course.
That's where you should stray all the time. It reminds me of when you hear the global warming eco-fascists constantly pushing the idea that there's this like big dark money oil and gas funded disinformation campaign.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely insane. There are tens of billions of dollars or more every single year pumped in from the United Nations, from states, from governments, from even from the big oil and gas companies, most of them, basically everyone except for Chevron, into this global warming hysteria and sanity and electric vehicles. And it's the most lucrative, one of the most lucrative fake industries on the planet. And it's extremely difficult. If you're a scientist who says maybe this is overblown, you're kicked out of the community. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to talk about it. But
yeah,
they're
it's
always,
not just in media.
Yeah, they're always pretending, well, this is this big dark money funded operation. No, it's not. These people, you don't get rich saying, I think you're full of it.
Yeah.
On that, you get ostracized. You get pushed out of your community.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with saying that, like, there are the very small portion of media that challenges the rest of media gets things wrong sometimes. There's absolutely nothing wrong with saying that. And maybe people think that that's downplaying the extent of what's uncovered in Dominion. But I would say, you know, we could get into a game about how poorly the corporate press is actually covering what's happening. Because even times when I thought, oh, this is a clear cut hit on Fox, I go follow the link to what the media is criticizing. And I'm like, this is not what they said at all. Like, it completely gets missed, for instance, that Tucker basically demolished Sidney Powell on air. And none of the media mentions this. It's incredible.
There have been some Trump sicko fans on Fox News in his time. Tucker was never among them.
No.
Like, ever among them.
No.
Not from the very beginning. Not in his coverage was never fawning. I mean, I remember walking, I was in Iowa, New Hampshire with him during the primaries when he started to kind of notice.
You write about this in your book, The Art of the Donald.
Yeah, that there was something different about Donald Trump from all the other politicians. And I remember like the antenna starting to go up and be like, this is weird. The first time we went to a Trump rally was in Iowa. It was like, I love the state of Iowa just fine, but I hate covering the campaigns there because everything is like 2.5 hours away from everything.
Right. It's not like New Hampshire.
Yeah, New Hampshire, you're like 30 minutes through a blizzard and you're at the ocean, you're in the mountains, you're in the town. I mean, it's really close. But we went to this place and a lot of the people there were like wearing Vietnam vet t-shirts, Vietnam vet jackets, Vietnam vet hats. And they'd like ridden their motorcycles there or driven in with their families. So it was definitely a blue collar veteran crowd. And there was this Trump in his Brioni suit and everything. and Trump had like no real special help. It actually hasn't changed that much. He had all these like little, either tall and skinny or short and fat, like little villains in pinstripe suits, look like the bad guys from 101 Dalmatians, like running around trying to control the press. Like just absolute like Joseph A. Bank mob wannabes. It was amazing. And they weren't that quick. So like they knew I was a reporter because I had a jacket on. And I did not fit in with the crowd.
Right.
So I ran into a bathroom and they chased me in there. I took off my blazer and I uncombed my hair and I unbuttoned my shirt and I walked right past them. There was no one else in the bathroom. It was like a high school. But Tucker couldn't escape because he's like 6'2" or something and like just stands out. And they were pulling him in like a scene in Jurassic Park of rounding up dinosaurs, like pulling him into this caged area in the back to be yelled at with the media. That was our first time at a Trump event. But we were there when we were just kind of taking it in and recognizing this candidate was something different. And everyone hating Trump was one of the things that made him start to like Trump a lot. And he was one of the first people out there to say, this guy's really interesting. But at the same time, what he says in his text messages, he didn't like his picks, so some of his picks to handle trade and finance, et cetera, is generally what he said in this show. He wasn't sycophantic. He
never came out and said, I effing despise or hate Donald Trump on air.
No, he never did that.
Nobody would.
Well, it'd be a weird thing to do. It's not
a weird thing to do.
He doesn't say that about Joe Biden.
Right.
He says he's too old.
Right.
He says he's lost it. He said that he criticizes his policies, but
right.
There's no actual smoking gun here for what's driving the left nuts. They're just really, really glommed onto this lawsuit, which, by the way, this Dominion lawsuit seems like exactly the kind of thing that could take down CNN or MSNBC.
Oh my gosh, yes.
The idea that you can't have opinion journalists opining
in their private group text messages.
And you can't interview people, you can't air stories. It seems like an absolutely insane lawsuit.
I would love to see the group text message between Don Lemon, Jeff Zucker, and Chris Cuomo. Seriously, I would love to see it. It'd be way worse.
Sue them. Get Discovery.
Yeah.
Just get that sweet, sweet Discovery.
The Watchdog on Wall Street podcast with Chris Markowski. Every day, Chris helps unpack the connection between politics and the economy and how it affects your wallet. Is the federal government using inflation to enforce their green agenda? If your energy price goes up, they'll try to sell you an electric vehicle. But if the price of your groceries go up, the Fed can do absolutely nothing. How do you get relief in your wallet while the federal government turns us into Europe? Whether it's happening in D.C. or down on Wall Street, it's affecting you financially. Be informed. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast with Chris Markowski on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, the Sandman sued them and got a great settlement out of it. I'm sure there are potential lawsuits against
part of that settlement is that the Discovery, they don't have to go through Discovery.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually probably too difficult to sue the media in the United States. You have to prove malice, intentional. I mean, it's kind of insane. I think New York Times versus Sullivan's a bit of a wild finding by the Supreme Court. But the only times that you usually do win in those lawsuits is because media companies don't want to go through the incredible rigmarole and the often embarrassment of all internal communications being leaked, mm-hmm. potentially.
No, I said this on Megyn Kelly's show yesterday, but like when I was growing
up,
Megyn Kelly, by the way, big fan of Federalist Radio Hour, and big listener, which we appreciate very much. But when I was growing up, Fox News meant a lot to me. Like in the middle of Wisconsin with, you know, we went to church every Sunday, probably thought differently about life than a lot of people in the corporate media in Manhattan, like skyscraper buildings did, owned guns, went hunting, just a very different, you know, way of life. And that it felt like the rest of Hollywood, the rest of media had just like utter contempt for people who lived like this. And Fox News is sort of a refuge for a lot of people, imperfect as it may be. The world, the country without Fox News is a country without questions to major media companies, with a putting a big platform, even though it's combined, you know, when you put it up against the combined powers of all the other networks, it's relatively small. But having that,
it's MSNBC plus CNN,
yeah,
a viewer is easy,
plus ABC Nightly News, NBC, Today
ABC
Show, Good Morning America, plus all of those different things. If you take that away, we are not a better country. Not even close. That is the one network that platforms people like Tucker Carlson. No other network would give Tucker Carlson a show anymore. And as annoying as people might get with Tucker Carlson, I mean, even like Laura Ingraham, somebody who challenges elite narratives, who may not have, you know, 10 years ago, but now actually has come to see. And I'm not talking about anyone in particular, but I think, you know, conservatism in general has come to have its eyes sort of forced wide open as to the state of the country. If you take that away, if you take people who are challenging that away, I mean, I wouldn't want to take a lot of the leftist voices that I disagree with on probably 90% of the issues, but who are willing to challenge corporate media, even if it's just to make money, like I'm sure it is cynically in the case of Rupert Murdoch. I don't know.
But
even if it's just to make money. Yeah. And that's a lot of the stuff from the Dominion lawsuit. You see the obsession with and paranoia almost with competition and that question, which is obviously what happens at businesses. But I wouldn't want any of those leftist voices to go away either. I mean, I wouldn't want anti-war MSNBC back in the Bush era to not have existed. All of the other networks were in a different place then.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of living in a place that's got free speech.
Isn't it wonderful?
You should.
Well, we have it.
Yeah, well, you have it. You should be allowed to. You should be allowed to voice dissent. I think that's important.
Yeah, and but this is all I'm saying is that like when Democrats in the House side right now are hysterical, confronted with three people on the left, Barry Weiss, Matt Taibbi, and Michael Schellenberger, acting like they're bigoted, like neo-Nazi sympathists. When we have that happening,
just for printing real facts and communications from inside of a private company that was handed over to them by the president of the company.
Yes. Yes. Private company, big business and big government implicated here. Democrats are hysterical over these three left of center journalists smearing them as conservatives, because to them, that's a smear, and basically trying to discredit their reporting, which has uncovered corruption in the business community, that some of these companies have power of like bigger than most countries, and our government. And Democrats are hysterically smearing them, and none of the media networks will take them seriously. And what the left wants to talk about right now is Fox News and Tucker Carlson is utter nonsense. It's utter nonsense. Anyway, that's all I wanted to talk about today, because I think that's a fair point.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks, like, again, we can go through the minutiae of the lawsuits. I am sure there's perfectly newsworthy stuff. I know there's perfectly newsworthy stuff in there. But to blow it up to the scale and scope that the media and the political establishment has is just insane. Chuck Schumer called for Murdoch to yank Tucker Carlson off the air.
Right. Remember when it came out that there was sexual harassment at Fox News? They made miniseries out of it. They made TV shows
right.
out of it.
Right.
I've heard from friends that there was no place, and of all the networks, as bad as CNN, every single network had people who was fired, because it was a culture that tolerated it throughout all of news media, especially in the 80s and 90s, 70s, and it continued in the 2000s. And all of them were guilty. All of them ended up firing people. All of them cleaned house. But only one of them had TV series made out of it. Only one of them had books written about it. There's this obsession. It's funny. Russell Brand was great the other day.
Oh, he was so good on Bill Maher.
Yeah, Russell Brand's a total wacko, but he's calling balls and strikes on some of this stuff. He's like, what are you talking about? You think that Fox News is propaganda? Do you live in a glass house?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole
thing. He was talking
to
John Heilman. He's an NBC analyst.
Yeah, absolute clown. And there's so much whipping rocks in glass houses. It's just amazing. It's difficult to have any self-reflection. It's a hard thing to look at oneself. It's much easier to look around and just point at other people. I mean, that's why I got when you're like, so tell me your own personal stuff.
I know.
Sometimes I like to share it, but not unexpectedly. It's difficult more to talk about those sort of things than it is to just point fingers and yell, which we do spend most of the time doing. But the complete lack of self-awareness in their critiques and their criticisms the whole way through is just mind-boggling. And we do it for a living, so we're around it all the time. But I mean, just the casual viewers, it can't be lost on them.
Yeah.
Like this is wild. And flipping between the channels and seeing the totally different Americas that are portrayed on and the different televisions, networks and cable stations and the different newspapers. It's a strange place, but as we started off talking about, it's kind of reflective of how it's always been mm-hmm. in American media
mm-hmm.
with a brief change when it was complete and total corporate control, you know, run by GE and whatever else. There was the Federalist newspaper, the Anti-Federalist newspaper, mm-hmm. the Republican, the Democrat. I mean, we're kind of a little bit back to that model, but we still, and the internet's made it easier, but it's still tough fighting every day.
I'm just saying, we're not going to play the stupid game that disempowers even imperfect institutions that are the only ones challenging power right now. It's just a stupid, stupid game. And I just would encourage people, you know, all the criticisms people will throw at conservatives right now, hypocrisy, double standards, blah, blah, blah. It's just not worth playing that stupid
game. Like on what? I don't even get it.
For, you know, rushing to defend Tucker or Fox News or whatever, which I don't think conservative media is even doing, but that's the straw man argument I've seen the left mount. Anyway, all this is to say it's a stupid game and it's one that makes the country worse
dumb.
Off. There you go, Christopher Bedford.
We just watched Night at the Museum at my house, so dumb is a big word.
I love that movie.
I love it. It's great.
It's a great DC movie, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first one's New York.
Oh, that's right. Second one is at the Smithsonian.
Back before Teddy Roosevelt got canceled, so he was still in it. evil Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, man. Christopher Bedford, executive editor of the Common Sense Society. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here.
All right. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the fray.
Place the flower.